Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Daf Ayin Vov in Maseches Avodah Zorah. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Four lines from the top of the Gemara on Daf Ayin Vav, we find Rav Amram raising what he feels is a contradiction between two sources, and he raises this issue to Rav Sheshes. In order to resolve the seeming incongruity between the two sources, the Gemara will offer five approaches. In our Nosei Mivneh heading, the Nosei a topic and Mivneh a structural note, in this case we've combined the Nosei with the Mivneh in our outside margin, we feature a triangle, and everyone can see this by glancing to the outside margin of their Gemara. You'll notice a triangle form, and we've written in five tshuvos. The Gemara will give five answers, liyashev stiro ben shnei mekoros, binyan hechsher kelim, five resolutions of a contradiction that appears in two sources in the realm of hechsher kelim, making vessels fit for use with kosher food. And we will be featuring here shpudim ve'askalah, spits and grills. Rami lay Rav Amram the Rav Sheshes. We are now in the Gemara. Rav Amram raises a contradiction to Rav Sheshes. To Rav Sheshes, meaning in the presence of Rav Sheshes. Tanan. On the one hand, we have our source that features clay, the Kalim of Goyim. This was our Mishnah on Ayin Heyomit Beis. It said Hashpudim Vaskala Malavnon Ba'ur, that one who acquires spits or grills from Gentiles, and before using it for kosher food preparation, one must expose them to an open fire, fire them up till they're white hot. The Hotnan Gabi Kochim, we have another source in the realm of preparation or cooking up of kochim meat, sacrificial meat. In the realm of sacrificial meat, we should say by way of introduction that korbonos have a time limit on them. Different korbonos have different time limits for their consumption. A korban chatos, for example, is a sacrifice that one has the day on which it's sacrificed and the immediate following night during which to consume it. If one doesn't consume the korban by the end of that night, it becomes nosar. Nosar is forbidden. Literally, nosar means that which is left over. So we can say that leftover korban meat, something that extends beyond its official time, becomes forbidden. Actually, it's so forbidden that it carries with it a very severe penalty for one who eats it, namely the penalty of kores. So in a manner of speaking, nosar is a more severe offense even than eating unkosher meats on a chulin level. So in the case of kochim, we have a source that says that if you want to cleanse or purge the vessels from the absorbed sacrifice taste of food items that are food items who get absorbed, their taste gets absorbed in these preparation vessels, it says hashpud vaskala mag'ilon bechamin, that it's enough to boil them up and thereby remove the korban absorption. What is the problem here? The first source that deals with the cleansing or the purging of a of Shpudim in Askela says Malabnan Ba'ur, which we've dashed underline. And in the second source dealing with Kachim, it seems that the method of preparing them is Mag'ilon Bechamin, which is a lesser form of purging, simply to boil them up with no need to expose them to an open fire. Omar Lehi, Rav Sheshes answers, and you can see this is triangled, and we've also kept count in this case of the answers in the immediate left-hand space. Left-hand, namely to the left-hand side of the Gemara text itself. You can see triangles with numbers in them continuing down the Omid, 5 in total. So Rav Sheshes says, Amram Bri, Amram, my son, Amram, Rav Amram was the one that raised the question. He says, Ma inyan kochim etzel giulei oivdei kechovim. How can you compare even the topic of kochim to the vessels acquired from Gentiles who used them for cooking up their unkosher food? Hocha hetera bola. In the case of kochim, in the case of sacrifices, when they were used for kosher carbon meat, for kosher sacrificial meat. Since the absorption that took place permitted food, in this case permitted korbanos, therefore boiling up is enough. Hasam, in the case of the clay goyim, the vessels acquired from Gentiles, Isura Bola, they were using their food preparation vessels, their grills and spits, for roasting pork. Omar Rabba reacts to this resolution of Rav Sheshes, and he says, Self, at the end of the story though, Ki Kapolit, even the sacrificial vessels, when they exude their absorption, Isura Kapolit, it's fine that yesterday it was used for cooking up chatos meat, but when I want to use that utensil the next day for cooking up, preparing new sacrificial meat, on the next day, the taste that's emerging is already forbidden. So what difference does it make whether it's a pork taste that is emerging or nosar taste which is emerging? Nosar being the taste on the next day, after the time lapse, the time allowance of the yesterday's korban lapsed, it also becomes forbidden. Elo Omar Rabo, my hagolo nami, the word hagolo that was found above in the kochim source, you can see with the arrows that appear to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text where this word is coming from. That word hagolo there was a reference to another process called shtifa umarika. This is a rinsing out of the vessel from the inside and the outside. But besides shtifa umarika, in order to purge a vessel of absorbed forbidden taste, you certainly would require libun, the exposure of the vessel to the open fire, just like any blias isur. It just so happens that in the realm of sacrificial vessels used for sacrificial purposes, there is also a shtifa umarika requirement. It's what Rashi calls a gzeras hamelech, a rule that appears in the Torah when dealing with kochim vessels. But that's something that takes place in addition to the necessary purging of absorbed tastes. So when it comes to purging of absorbed tastes, whether it be vessels acquired from Gentiles or sacrificial vessels that absorbed absorbed nosar taste, the same purging process takes place. Amalei Abaye objects to Rabbo's answer on technical grounds. The explanation that Rabba offered to the Kochim source that had read Hashpud Vaskalo Magilon, and Rabba tried to say that the word Magilon means Mriko Shtifa, Abai feels that's not accurate. Me, dummy. How can you compare the Mriko Shtifa to Magilon? Mriko Shtifa Bitsonein Hagolo Bechamin. What Abaye is objecting to is the use of the word Magilon as a reference to Mriko Shtifa, like Rabbo claimed, just is not, doesn't seem possible. The reason for that is that the process of Mriko Shtifa is done with cold water. Hagola, or the word Magilon, is always associated with boiling water. So to use the term Magilon, which is associated with boiling water, as a reference to Mriko Shtifa is just not possible. Elo Omar Abaye, Yagid Olov Reo. Abaye has his resolution as far as the two sources are concerned, and he uses an expression which in effect is a posuk in Eov, but we use it as a technical expression. Yagid Olov Reo means let one source teach us concerning the other. As follows. Tono Chado Libun. One source used the expression Malavnam Lur, namely our Mishnah from Ayin Hei Omid Beis, dealing with vessels acquired from Gentiles. The preparation of them is through Libun. However, Vuhu Hadin Lahagola. Hagola, boiling them up, is also necessary. In other words, the source that teaches boiling up from Kochim shall shed light on the source dealing with vessels acquired from Gentiles. So that while the source dealing with vessels acquired from Gentiles mentions Libun Ba'ur, in addition to that, you would apply that which is mentioned by Kochim. Tana Hosam Hagola, the source by Kochim taught Hagola, boiling them up, Fuadin Libun, and in addition to the Hagola, you would also require Libun, because the source of clay Goyim teaches concerning Kochim as well. Omale Rava. Rava objects to Abaye and says that the employment of Yagid Olov Reo works differently than the way Abaye proposed. If the two sources are taught in a Yagid Olov Reo fashion, then the way that works is as follows. Lisninu the Kulu Bechado, you would choose one of the topics, whether it be Kochim or the clay Goyim. Let's use Kochim for our illustration purposes. In the realm of Kochim, you would have taught Likulu, all of them, namely, you would have taught Magilon and Libun in one source. The Lisni Chado Beidoch, and then in the other source, in the clay Goyim source, you would have taught one of them, let us say, the Libun Ba'ur. Let's read that again. The Lisni Chado Beidoch Achriti, and as we said, teach one of the methods, one of the two required methods in the other source. The Lemo, and then say, Yagid Olov Reo. Then say, let the source that mentions both of the items serve to teach over to the source that mentioned one of the methods, and say that just like in the previous source both methods were required, so too in the source that mentions one method, in fact both methods are required. Elo Omar Rava. Rava comes up with his resolution. We have, before we go further in the Gemara, there's a technical correction that we must make. We mentioned in our introduction that there were five resolutions. Technically, we should refer to this as six resolutions. The truth being that the final resolution, that which Rav Ashi presents, he'll be referring back to the first one. So whether you count them as, we'll have in as far as numbers of rabbis are concerned, we will eventually have six names appearing, and from the marking standpoint, we would prefer to enumerate six opinions, but in effect, there are five answers, because Rav Ashi will be referring back to the first answer. But as far as names are concerned, as the Gemara unfolds, we'll find six names addressing this. So at this point, Rava would be the fourth rabbi addressing the contradiction, and he says, Eloma, Rava kochim hainu tamayu. As far as kochim are concerned, this is the reason that we don't necessitate libun ba'ur. We don't necessitate exposure to open fire, and we can rely on the cooking up process, if you will. Kidrav Nachman Omar Rabba Vavua the Omar Kol Yoim V'Yoim Naase Gi'ul L'Chaveroi. Every subsequent day of cooking up sacrificial meat serves as a purging of the previous day's cooking. We will appreciate this more as we go on in the Gemara and see how this is supposed to be a solution. Tainach Shlomim. This answer that Rava just gave would be a sufficient explanation with regard to Shlomim sacrifices. We mentioned before the time span allowed for a Chatos sacrifice. We mentioned that was a day and the immediate following night. At this point, we can mention there's a different standard when it comes to a Shlomim-type sacrifice. A Shlomim-type sacrifice has 2 days and the intervening night during which to consume it. So the method of purging or of preventing Nosar as being a problem by relying on each subsequent day of cooking up, that calculation or that configuration will be suitable with regard to Shlomim. The Gemara continues, Dekevon de l'shnei yomim misakli, since Shlomim has a 2-day eating time during which to consume it, Mekami denehevi nosar, before the absorbed Shlomim taste of yesterday's Shlomim has a chance of becoming nosar, Kohavi gi'ul, on day 2, when I cook up Shlomim, what happens? The cooking up of day 2, in effect, purges the vessel of its absorbed day 1 taste. But the day 1 taste itself on day 2 is okay, because on day 2 you still have time to eat yesterday's Shlomim. So the taste that was absorbed from yesterday's Shlomim on day 2 is still okay. Therefore, if you continue this in a rollover fashion, you will find that you never have any problem. Elo chatos. But if we take a look at chai chatos, kevon de liyoyim v'laylo misaklo, since the time span for eating a chatos is the day that it's sacrificed and the immediate subsequent night, kimevashel bo ho'idno chatos, when you cook up today on day 1 a chatos, by the time you get till tomorrow, have nosar. By tomorrow, that taste is nosar. Ki hodar mevashel bo lemochor, on day 2, if you decide to cook up in that vessel, oy shlomim oy chatos, whether it be a shlomim or a chatos, kopolit nosar, dechatos to idno, dechatos to shlomim de lemochor. There is, polit is to emerge from absorption. There is going to emerge on day 2, yesterday's chatos into today's chatos or shlomim, or if you want to put it another way, say the same thing, would be today's chatos taste will be emerging into tomorrow's chatos or shlomim. So how can you say, as a rule across the boards, that kochim vessels, the boiling up, is effective? Amri, so the Gemara answers, lo tzricha, the source that says that boiling up is effective or is sufficient is as follows. Dechimevashil bo chatos ha'idna. If one does cook up a chatos korban today in a particular vessel, hodar mevashil bo ha'idna shlomim, he will take the trouble of cooking up in that vessel a shlomim sacrifice as well. Dechatos de lemochor Ushlomim de Esmoil Behadi Hadodi Kosholim Zimnayu. the yesterday's shlomim and today's chatos, or if you say it another way, tomorrow's chatos and today's shlomim time period end together. V'hodar mevashel shlomim d'lemochar, and on day two you'll cook up another shlomim. So that whenever you have a situation of a chatos being cooked up in a vessel, immediately after that you'll have a shlomim cooked up. The shlomim will purge the vessel of the chatos taste, so that when you get to the next day, the only taste that remains in the vessel will be a shlomim taste. But that shlomim taste on the second day is quite all right. So that if on day two you want to cook up a chatos again, no problem, because a kosher taste will emerge into the chatos that's being cooked up. And you'll then cook up on day two another shlomim and keep the rollover going like that. The Gemara asks, "Ihachi hagola nami lo liboi." If this is what we're talking about, then there should be no need for hagola whatsoever. Hagola being a boiling up of the vessel independent of the cooking up of the sacrifices. But if we're cooking up the sacrifices in this rollover fashion, namely every time a chatos is cooked up, you will cook up a shlomim, that itself would be its purging, its cleansing of any potential problem. Why then does the source say that the sacrificial the sacrifice used vessels need an additional hag'olah process? They shouldn't require that. Kashya, this remains as a difficulty as far as Rava's Hesber is concerned. Rav Popa says there is no contradiction between the two sources, the clay goyim and the clay kochim, high korid, high low korid. The clay goyim is korid, is encrusted. They use their vessels, but not with as great frequency as the Beis HaMikdash does. In the Beis HaMikdash, the vessels are always being used. Therefore, there's no time for them to be encrusted. As a result of that, with regard to the kochim, since they're constantly being used, hagola is sufficient. It doesn't need as severe a purging process. But, however, when you're dealing with the vessels of the Gentiles, since the absorbed taste becomes encrusted, the absorbed food matter becomes korid, encrusted, therefore a more intense purging procedure is necessary, and that is in the form of libun, of being exposed to an open fire. Rav Ashi Omar li'olam kidamoron me'ikora hocha hetera bola hocha isura bola. Rav Ashi throws back to the original answer, making a distinction between the absorption in the time of kochim. It was absorbing an allowed taste, was kosher sacrifices. The case of Gentile vessels were absorbing unkosher food matters. And with that difference in mind, we can say there's a difference in the purging process. Udeko kashiloch, but you may ask, in the case of kochim, when the emerging or the exusion of the absorbed taste takes place, isura kopolet, the nosar, the forbidden taste, is that which is emerging, and therefore we shouldn't be any more mekil in kochim than we shouldn't treat kochim any differently than we would the clay goyim. There still is a difference. Beidna de kopolet, at the time that the unkosher or the problematic taste is emerging in the realm of the kochim, lo isei liisura bi'enei, the isur is not around anymore. When the food item, or when the absorbed taste in the case of kochim becomes nosar, when the prohibition comes about, there, the iser is no longer there. The iser was the meat. we're talking about the absorbed taste becomes nosar. So what is becoming forbidden in the case of the kotshim? Absorbed taste. Absorbed taste is not something substantive. It's not extant. And as a result of that, Rashi says, uses the expression, "Me'olam lo hukar isuro." The isur in the case of kotshim was never something that was recognizable or noticeable to the eye. This is in distinction to unkosher food of pork, for example, a piece of pork that was cooked up in a Gentile's vessel. The pork was something that is noticeable. One sees it. That distinction serves as grounds for a differentiation made between the way of kashering clay goyim as opposed to the way that we kasher kochim vessels. The ad kamo melavnon, when we speak about exposing a vessel to an open fire, how long must the vessel be in the fire in order to assure its kashering? Omer of money, ad shetoshir kliposon, which literally means until the vessel's outer surface melts off. Some meforshim refer this to explain this as until sparks would fly from the outer surface of the vessel, or until it becomes white hot. The ketzod magilon, Omar of Huna, how is the boiling process to take place? What are we talking about? We're talking about a vessel that was used for unkosher food, and you need to boil up the vessel. How is this accomplished? Omar of Huna, Yore Ketana, Besoch Yore Gedola. You would find a larger pot than the pot you are trying to kasher, and you would take your smaller pot and put it into boiling water that's being boiled up in a larger pot. The Gemara asks, Yoyra Gedoyla Mai, what about a situation where the pot you want to kasher is itself the largest pot available? So how can I kasher it? Toshma, Dehahu Duda Dehavoi Be Rav Akavya. There was a dud, a vessel, we can say a pot, that was in the yeshiva of Rav Akavya. And what did Rav Akavya do in order to kasher it? Ahadir le gadanfo delisha apuma. He took a piece of dough and created a rim of dough surrounding the lip or the rim of the pot. So what do we have? We have a very large pot, and slightly below the surface of the pot's rim, he took a piece of dough, creating an artificial or additional rim, so to speak. Umalyuha maya, and then filled up the pot till its brim with water. The arsecha, and then boiled up the pot. As the boiling takes place, there will be some overflow, and the overflow will overflow the rim of the pot and thereby cleanse the rim as well. Being that we had a very large pot that you couldn't immerse in another pot, you would still have been left with a problem concerning the absorption of unkosher food that took place on the rim of this pot. So in order to ensure that the rim gets kashered, he creates this artificial additional rim surrounding the dough, surrounding the pot with the dough rim, boiling up or filling up the pot till its brim, boiling it up, and the artificial dough rim will enable the boiling water to accumulate in it, thereby covering the rim of the pot and purging it of any absorbed taste. Omar Rava, man chochim lemevad ki ha milsa ilav Rav Akavya. Who is the wise one who thought up such an ingenious solution if it's not Rav Akavya? The Gavra Rabahu, he is a great man. Kosovar, and he's of the opinion, keboiloi kach polto. The method that a pot absorbs forbidden taste is the same method with which it will release the absorbed taste. Ma bolo benitzotzos, just like absorption
took place in this case when we're focusing on the rim. The rim absorbed through spattering, af polto benitzotzos. So too, the emerging and the purging of that absorption takes place through spattering as well. And as we mentioned, the dough rim that's constructed around the entire rim will ensure that the entire rim, all areas of the rim, will be purged of any absorption. Hasakin shofa v'hi tahura. The Mishnah mentioned that as far as cleansing a knife that was owned by Gentiles, one would scrape it and that will make it kosher. Omar Rav Ukfa bar Chama v'no'atso asoro pe'omim bakarka. According to Rashi, the suggestion here is, in addition to the scraping, one also jabs it into the ground 10 times. There are other meforshim on this topic as to, is this in effect something additional to the scraping or an alternative to the scraping? But Rashi learns that this is in addition to the scraping. Omar Rav Huna Bre Rav Yeshua Ubekarke She'eno Avuda. The jabbing of the knife into the ground is done provided the ground has not been cultivated. It's untilled ground, so that the earth's consistency is rather dense and solid. If it were loose dirt, so the jabbing it into the ground would accomplish nothing. Omar Rav Kahana Ubesakin Yofe She'ein Bo Gumos. This suggestion is effective only for a knife that is very smooth, that has no gumos in it. Gumos literally means holes in it. There are no sections on the knife into which food may have been absorbed, whereby this jabbing process will not be able to extricate any food particles from the holes in the knife. So Rav Kahana is pointing out that this method of no'atza bakarka is effective only if the knife is smooth. Tanyo nami hochi, a Tanaic source supports this. Sakin yofa she'ein bo gumos, a smooth knife that has no etchings in it. No'atza asor polman bakarka. Then you would jab it 10 times into the ground. Omar Rav Huna brei de Rav Yoshua. Le'echol bo tzonein. The methods that we've been speaking about for the cleansing a knife is sufficient provided you're intending to use the knife for cutting cold foods. Rashi points out, but if you're interested in using the knife for eating something that's hot, it's forbidden to use the knife until you boil it up. Continuing in the Gemara, Ki ha de mar Yehuda uboti bar tuvi. A story follows that illustrates the halacha that we just mentioned, that the cleansing of a knife by jabbing it in the ground is sufficient provided you're interested in consuming something that's cold. So a story takes place involving Mar Yehuda and Boti Bar Tuvi. Havu Yasvi Kami de Shavur Malka. They were sitting in the presence of the Persian monarch, King Shavur. Aisu Lekamayu Esroiga. They were served an Esrog. Posak Ochal. Posak Vehavle Leboti Bar Tuvi. The king cut a piece of Esrog and ate it. He cut off a piece of Esrog for Boti Bar Tuvi, and Hodar Dotsa Asora Zimni Ba'ara Posak Havle Lamar Yehuda. And then he jabbed the knife into the ground 10 times. Apparently this Gentile king was familiar with laws of kosher, of kashrus, and before serving Mar Yehuda, he jabbed it into the ground 10 times. Omar Le Boti Bar Tuvi. Boti Bar Tuvi said, regarding himself, he said, "Va'u gavro lav bar Yisrael hu." He says, regarding, am I not Jewish as well? In other words, why are you treating me differently than the way you treat Mar Yehuda? Amale, so the king answers, Mor kim li begave. Regarding Rav Yehuda, I know, I recognize him to be a person who's concerned with halacha, concerned with laws, and will not eat something that's forbidden. Umor lo kimli begave, but you, I'm not so sure of. I'm not so sure that you are a person who's so careful with halacha. Therefore, in serving you, I didn't take pains to make sure that it was kosher. Ikod Yamri, another version as to why the king treated these two gentlemen differently. A little background is necessary before reading this, and it was that the Persians used to host their guests by not only offering them lodging, but they would provide comfort women for their own pleasure, for their hedonistic indulgences. King Shaphar, who hosted Mar Yehuda and Bati, he provided them with these comfort women. In the case of Mar Yehuda, he refused that offering. In the case of Bati, he didn't hesitate and he accepted that. And this showed the king who he was dealing with. The Gemara says, Ikod Amri, another version as to why the king treated these two people differently. Amale, the king said to Bati, Itgar mai avdis burta, remember what you did last night? And Rashi points out, my avdis burta, derech parsoim limsor noshim lachsanoim, the practice of the Persians was to give women over to their guests, ukshishigron lahem balayla shovar, when they were provided to these two guests the night before, kibel Bati, revuto lo kibel. Bati didn't hesitate to indulge in this, and Bar Yehuda, though, refused. And as such, the king came to the conclusion that Mar Yehuda is someone who is much more careful and strict with his religious practices, and hence he treated him thusly with regard to kashrus as well. There's a further information on Bati Bar Tuvi that's found in the Tosfos, but as far as our explanation is concerned, this will suffice. With that, we conclude the Maseches Avodah Zarah and our Shiur for today.